And welcome to the Sportscast, February 20th, 2018. We had Oscar Arangarin yesterday, and today we have Jason Baca. Jason Baca is an old college, building
old
mate, schoolmate,
classmate,
friend. He's come down to visit a few times here in Miami, watch a Heat game or two. And he's come here to share some NBA insight. Jason, how are you doing today?
Doing great, man. Fantastic day here in Virginia. It's looking nice outside. It's about 75 degrees. It's probably not as hot as in Miami, though.
I hear that. It's I heard it was 80 in D.C., so I'm thinking it's been a warm week. But I imagine it might be cold in a few days or from now. So.
So what's our topic of the day today?
Well, this past weekend, the only thing that was happening in sports besides the Olympics was the NBA All-Star Game. What were your thoughts?
Yeah. I thought it was good. Huge improvement from how they've been in years past, especially last year was, I don't know if you watched it or not, was it's just become, it's what everybody says, it's a joke, right? It's kind of everybody letting each highlights, and it's not really a game. It's not really what a lot of people are hoping to see, which is all of the world's best players playing each other. It's not that, because they're not really playing at the world's best player type level. So I think this last rendition was a huge step forward, where LeBron's like getting people involved and trying to get them to participate and play some defense. And it worked. It was far more entertaining. And that little push at the end of the game there, where the team LeBron was down to team Steph pretty much the whole game, and then finally to come back and win it at the end, made it really sad.
Yeah, the game was pretty high tense. There was no defense, after all, because most All-Star games don't have defense. Team LeBron, won 148-145, and the format was very good this year. Real brief, what you think about the
West is best, right? That's what they always say. And so when you just split right down the middle, East and West, then at the All-Star game, sometimes you have all the good players who have all moved out west to teams like Golden State or living in all the Western popular areas. And then you have the weak East, who's basically LeBron and everybody else. So the fact that LeBron and Steph got to pick their teams, and it balanced out the power, I think, a little bit as far as the talent on either team.
Yeah, and also the day before, they had the three-point contest and the slam dunk. Booker won the three-point contest, and Mitchell won the slam dunk. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I thought Larry Nance Jr. should have won, but I don't know. What did you think about it? I was relatively underwhelmed with this year's dunk contest. I thought a lot of the dunks were executed well, but I didn't see anything that you hadn't seen 100 times before, or that a lot of guys in the NBA right now couldn't also do or pull off. It didn't feel. They all just kind of felt mediocre. Did you like the dunk contest? What did you think?
For a while, the slam dunk contest has been mediocre to me. They're unknown players. It feels like they put a lot of rookies or sophomores into this. And don't know why. Younger guys. And I don't know why LeBron doesn't, participate. He's not old. He's still dunking. You see in those All-Star games that he's keep dunking it. Why, the stars are not participating?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know. I happen to think that one of the reasons why you don't see the stars participating anymore is probably twofold. Number one, it takes a lot of time to get really good at these types of dunks. In-game dunking, I don't know that there's anybody better than LeBron James, because, he'll try reverses and he'll try a 360 every once in a while. He'll try to cock it back from the free throw line to try to get on that highlight reel, where a lot of guys are coached not to take those type of risks, just make the basket. So in game, I think LeBron is still obviously the king of that. But practice and a lot of agility and a lot of flexibility to pull off a lot of these stunt type dunks. And to be honest, I just don't know that people like LeBron or Kevin Durant, et cetera, I don't think they have time, to be honest with you, to be spending extra hours in the gym practicing dunks for the dunk contest. And I think that's why you see a lot of younger guys. They have the time. They're coming off the bench of some no-name team that, you know, nobody watches. So they got the extra time in the gym to try out their dunks. And they do have fresher legs. They probably just spend more time doing it. And then also, I mean, you got to wonder, like, is there an aspect to this where, like, guys who are the stars of the NBA, who have a little more clout in the NBA, who don't want to be exposed in the dunk contest? They don't want to be showed up by some 23-year-old kid coming off the bench of some no-name team who's making them look like a fool out there because, you know, they're just so much better at that stylized type dunking. So probably it's twofold. It's that LeBron just doesn't have time to get good dunks, and he knows because he's going against all these younger guys who do have the time to practice, he's probably not going to win. So what do you think?
I mean, I really concur with you, and I think if LeBron had to do it or any big star, they would have done it early on in their first couple of years of their career.
Right.
It's like that's how it works. Michael Jordan
did
it in his first couple of years.
And,
yep. But
the so did Kobe.
Yeah, Kobe as well. The three-point contest, though, you see a little bit of mix of veteran. You saw Klay Thompson was second place.
Right.
So – Mitchell's the one that won the third 3-point contest, right? Was it Mitchell? No,
he won the dunk contest.
Okay.
So, but give me your thoughts about the dunk contest as this year, as it compares to previous years. So a lot of the talk online, the internet, Twitter has been blowing up about the dunk contest being weak this year. That a lot of the dunks were just kind of pedestrian or mediocre. As opposed to, you know, the people that we hold in high regard, the Vince Carters, the people, you know, even Blake Griffin or Dwight Howard, the people who make the dunk contest exciting by jumping over cars and jumping over people, or even Aaron Gordon last year and Zach LaVine going at it. Just it was a lot more exciting to watch. And this year just kind of felt like, everybody thinks that. So,
I mean. I honestly thought, it was boring. They did bring back some vintage stuff. Like that one guy from the Suns was wearing his dad's uniform. And there was one guy that did Vince Carter.
Talking about Larry Nance Jr.
Yeah. And the guy that did like the Vince Carter slam dunk vintage. Yeah, it wasn't exciting. I don't think there was there was just nothing, you know, twirling, no, jumping over a car. There was no, it feels like, I don't know, when Michael Jordan did it back in the day, he jumped from like the foul, no, from like not half court, but from like the 3-point line and he flew. But it feels
from
like
the free throw line.
Yeah. So, you know, it's always an argument every year. It is what it is. I mean, what else are you going to replace it with?
Yeah, I mean, like, people were jumping over a windmill, you know? Like, he caught it off the glass, windmill. Again, it was perfect. It was executed really well. It looked beautiful. But, I mean, who can't do that? You know, like, what guy in the NBA can't, with a little bit of practice after a few shots, throw it off the glass and windmill it? Like, most guys can do that. So I think as far as the fans complaining that the dunk contest was weak this year is that they didn't see anything that wasn't just kind of normal, that guys who are 6'8" and who play professional basketball can do a lot of the dunks that we saw. Again, I guess with time and practice and all that, but you always want to up the ante every year. You know, like if Blake Griffin jumping over a car, like obviously he's taking it to another level. Or even I remember one year Dwight Howard getting a sticker and jumping up and sticking it as high as he could on the backboard before dunking it, just showing like how high he can elevate and get. Like even little things like Michael Jordan putting down the tape at the free throw line, just showing you how far he's actually jumping. Even things like that that don't seem real impressive when you watch them, when you really think about, wow, he got up really high or he had to jump really high to do that, it still adds a level of anticipation And then, of course, it's the dunks that nobody sees coming, that you don't really think about it. We've seen between the legs. We've seen 360, but I remember a dunk. It was last year or 2015. Zach LaVine, you know, he jumps and then pulls it behind his back and around all in the air. He just went around his back both sides. Like, it was unexpected. So it just kind of struck you as, wow, that was a really cool dunk. And I just didn't see any of that this year. It just kind of felt like, you know, the battle of the mediocre dunks that everybody else can do. To me, it was kind of weak. I didn't like it. It was definitely not the highlight of the All-Star weekend, which a lot of times the dunk contest is the highlight.
Historically, what has been your favorite All-Star moment?
Usually the dunk contest, because the three-point contest is exciting, especially when you get people who are known for three-point shooting. Like, I remember when Steph and Clay were going head-to-head, and it's like, man, these are the two of the best shooters, and they're on the same team, but now they're competing against each other in the three-point shooting contest. So that's exciting, but in general, you're just shooting threes. There's not a lot of creativity to it. It either goes in or it doesn't go in, and it's just a hard metric of how many went in. It's a hard number. Who wins, who loses. But with the dunk contest, there's room for creativity. There's room for the anticipation. There's room for surprise. And it's based on the judge's call. So there's just more drama, I guess, in the dunk contest, because it's not just a hard metric like you either made it or you didn't make it. Because the judges might give a 50 to somebody and you're in your chair at home going, what? I can't believe you gave that guy a 50. And then he'll do something amazing and the judges give him a 42 and you're like, what? So it just anticipate it builds the drama. The dunk contest for me has always been the highlight of All-Star Weekend, especially because the game is historically, up until this point anyway, been a joke. It's just a joke.
It is a street ball game, no defense, but you know, what was most talked about was the format. I think the format should be, you know, continued. And they should make it live, you know, like a lottery. And that will increase the NBA ratings, I guess.
Yeah.
Whatnot. So far.
Yeah.
In the NBA season, who do you see the best of the East and the best in the West?
As far as the teams yeah. are concerned?
One team from each. From
yeah. Well, I mean, it's what everybody keeps saying, which is the Cavaliers from the East. I know Toronto is doing really well. They actually look really, really good for those who are paying attention. But, you know, it's how many times has LeBron met Toronto in the playoffs, and Toronto has looked good all season long and has on paper, you know, a really good team, and then they just crumble when they play against LeBron. They can even look real good in the first couple of rounds, but as soon as they meet LeBron, it's over. And I don't know if it's just a confidence thing. I don't know if it's LeBron knows how to pick them apart. I mean, Toronto's got an amazing coach. This is probably the deepest team they've had in some years as far as their bench depth. But, I mean, when push comes to shove, as great as Toronto looks, my money's going to be on LeBron. Like, he's going to do it, especially now with the pieces he has and being re-energized and re-engaged into the game. He, in my mind, there's no doubt he's going to come out of the East. The West, however, I think is far more up for grabs. We're really just talking about two teams here, which is the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors. The Rockets have a real, real good shot. I don't think they're underestimated, because I think people are properly estimating and finally giving them some credit. It's just the question has always been the postseason. James Harden, typically in the postseason, has crumbled. Chris Paul is oftentimes getting injured or just shying away from the big moment, etc. So this year will be the year that's going to finally put a test to James Harden and Chris Paul to see, can they finally rise to that level where they don't just perform well against some teams, but particularly perform well against the team, which is Golden State. But if ever they were equipped to do it, this year they are equipped to do it. But I am holding out just on one thing, which is I want to see what the Spurs look like if and when Kawhi comes back and he's healthy. If Kawhi comes back and he's healthy, I never count the Spurs, because of Greg Popovich, because of Kawhi, because of their ability to figure teams out and to adjust in the series, because of their championship pedigree. Without Kawhi, I don't think it's possible. But with Kawhi, if he comes back and he's healthy, I don't think you can just write them off. I think they always have a puncher's chance in any series that they're in if they have a healthy team and Greg Popovich has time to prepare. I don't know. I don't think there's a lock in the West, and I don't think you can pick a particular team. I really do think it is flip a coin. Is it Houston or is it Golden State? Or are the Spurs that dark horse that are just going to come up out of nowhere in the big moment?
I disagree on the West. I don't think James Harden
okay.
is able to come up big. He has never had, when it comes to those big moments. Same for Chris Paul. Had a great team with the Clippers, even better than the Rockets, I think. And he did not come up big. Mm-hmm. I think Golden State has it. San Antonio looks a little bit weak. I mean, Kawhi Leonard's all they got. And then he'll be coming back after an injury. So I don't think San Antonio will be a force.
State he's make or break.
Out. Yes. Squeaking out mm-hmm. sounds a little low, but I think they'll make it. In the East, I do think the Celtics have a good chance. I think if they take the Cavs to a 7-game series, they could, squeak it out.
You think so?
I think very much so. I think, Kyrie, he's hungry. The Boston team, Steven, they've been building up for this for a while. Cleveland has a new team. They're still gelling. Yes, they're doing good.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. They're doing great.
Yeah.
But I think Boston has some confidence. I think they can do it. If they get home court advantage, it's over.
You think so? You think Boston is going to beat the Cavs? Like, currently how they look? How both teams look? How Boston's been looking and how now the Cavs re-energize with new players and everybody's gelling. You think you would still give Boston the edge?
I will give Boston the edge. Cleveland, has some youth. Has some explosion, but I don't think it would be enough.
Right.
Because I think Boston's been playing together for most of the season together. Brad Stevens has some tricks up his sleeve. And I think Kyrie wants
sure.
it. I think Kyrie's hungry. I mean, I'm not saying that this is it for him. I mean, he's still young. He still has years left ahead of him. But I think Boston has
right.
it. But like I said, if they take him to a 7-game series, that's the only caveat.
Yeah. See, I don't think they have the firepower. I love Brad Stevens as a coach. I think he's going to be great, and he's already proven himself to be great. I obviously love Kyrie, phenomenal player. I love the pieces that are forming around him and gelling. Again, if you had Gordon Hayward full strength, then that would be a different conversation. But I just don't see Boston really busting through and becoming like a perennial finals contender until LeBron retires. Like once LeBron is done and he's gone and he's out of the East, then I think Boston is primed to go. And by that time, they will have built up enough momentum, stacking their team and everybody gelling together, building those relationships, that history together. But I really don't see it, and especially even next year or even the next year, 2020, like, I just don't see it being their time yet. I still think it's LeBron's time. Somehow he's managed to stay in his prime and perform better than ever at age 33. He's got now the young talent he needs around him who look up to him, who respect his leadership and that work really well with him together. And I think they're just getting started. I don't know how many years LeBron has left of this type of high-level play, of course, barring any sort of injury. But I would give him at least two more. 35 years old, maybe even 36. I mean, he's kept himself healthy this long. And as long as LeBron is playing at full strength, and if you give him a team of young guys who work really well together and who are athletic and who can defend, it doesn't really matter how good Boston gets. It's not their time yet. And until LeBron either retires or the sun really starts to set on him, like physically, he starts to fall off that cliff, as they say, with Father Time, I just don't see anybody beating LeBron, man. Again, if he doesn't have the pieces, it's different. If he doesn't have a team, it's different. If there's all sorts of like leadership issues within the Cavaliers organization, that's different. But right now, how they look and how they could look moving forward if they can afford to keep their team over the next couple of years. And if LeBron decides to stay in Cleveland, I don't think Boston's got a shot for like another couple of years. I really don't.
I will give you this. LeBron is still looking good at his age. Obviously, he's only 33. Of course, he should be playing good. But I do not see him taking a step back. I mean, Jordan played good until 35. Mm-hmm. But you're right. LeBron is still in his prime. I don't think he's at the end of his prime. I don't see it. I mean, if he's, getting knee injuries or ankle injuries, or if he's not you know, missing out a lot of games, then we'll be talking about that.
Sure.
There is a question from the audience from Eric Ryan.
Well, that changes everything.
He asks,
"Yeah,
what's your curious about Dr. J's thoughts on Dr. J?"
Well, number one, I'm privileged to share the same name, the same namesake as Dr. J. I love Dr. J. I've always loved Dr. J. Obviously, I was a very small kid / baby when he did his thing. But I just, yeah, I love it. I love that I always get a laugh out of people whenever somebody else calls me Dr. J, or sometimes if I introduce myself to other people, like in class or something, as Dr. J. I love that I always get a laugh, and people immediately always make that connection. And then I usually throw in a joke about, you know, not being able to dunk like he can, but he can't grade papers like I can, you know. So, yeah, I love it. I love Dr. J, and I love the namesake.
Here are some random questions. Ready?
Sure. Shoot.
How do you have your pancakes?
How do I have my pancakes?
Yeah.
I really don't ever, I mean, whatever, I guess at IHOP, I don't ever eat pancakes except at IHOP. And
I mean, for example, really good at IHOP. You like chocolate chip, you like blueberries on it, pecan, peanut butter chips.
No, just regular pancakes with some syrup.
Awesome.
Sounds good to me. And some butter. Pie. That's the only important part. Just make sure it's a really big stack.
How much can you bench?
Man, I don't want to be that guy, but I'm talking about my glory days in the gym. Right now, I have no idea. I used to lift weights. I mean, that's what all these like guys in the gym always say. Oh yeah, I used to bench, blah, blah, blah. I used to be buff too. But once upon a time, my bench was pretty high, but right now, I mean, I basically just, most of my workouts are yoga. So I don't really bench press anymore. I have no idea. I have no idea.
Which sport is more boring, golf or tennis?
Oh man. Yeah, I really don't watch either one. Well, is golf a sport? Is that considered?
I guess
it is. Right. Kind of like race car driving. Which is more boring? I don't know. You got to be into it, right? Like if you're into golf, it's not boring. Or if you're into tennis, my grandmother, she was really, really into tennis. She knew all the players. She knew all the rules. But honestly, I haven't watched either one in so long. If I had to sit down and you made me watch either a golf tournament or a tennis tournament, like which one would I pick? Which poison would I choose? I guess I'd probably rather watch golf. Yeah. I don't know. Tennis is just, it's a lot of running around and I don't understand it. And, the point system's all jacked up. Brian Regan has a really funny stand up bit about tennis scores. You should check it out.
And finally, what is the best thing to have with cheese?
Wine, of course. red wine. no, anything Mexican is better with cheese all over it. I mean, who wants a burrito with no cheese or enchiladas with no cheese? Cheese obviously goes best with anything Mexican.
Well, Jason, thanks for coming on the show. How can people reach you?
Yeah, man. Pretty much just Instagram. That's pretty much all I ever use. I used to have Twitter. I don't have a Facebook anymore. But yeah, Instagram is just at Jason Baca, BACA. And yeah, that's pretty much it. It's mostly just, I'll warn you ahead of time though, it's mostly just pictures of my newborn son. So if you have no interest in seeing somebody else's, you know, pictures of their kids, then you probably won't want to follow me anyway. But you can hit me there, reach out, and let's chat.
He's a fun follow. Jason Baca, thanks for joining the Sportscast.
Thank you for having me, man.